Welcome to Wait to Roll That Again, a podcast about designing tabletop role-playing games. Over this season, you've heard as I've begun my own journey into game design. I've experienced the highs and lows of designing my own system, from finding an idea I really loved to realizing that the system wasn't working and heading right back to the drawing board. During this process, I've been able to spend time talking to a whole range of wonderful designers whose experiences have helped guide me in the right direction. Last episode, I ran a big playtest of the current system, and now I want to talk about that experience to sum up this first season of Wait to Roll That Again. Let's dive back into the playtest. You might remember how it ended. There's a creaking and an echoing from upstairs, as you can hear loud footsteps from upstairs.
A T-Rex.
But whatever that is, T-Rex or otherwise, the three of you will have to find it out another time.
No!
Alex, we have to keep playing.
Come on.
You want to keep playing?
Of course.
This is such a cliffhanger.
I know, you can't leave us
like
that.
I tested the system.
You're using us for your test.
After I crushed the hopes and dreams of my lovely players, I spoke to Liam, Freya, and Zoe about their experiences playing the game and asked them some questions about how the game might continue to develop from here.
The most positive reaction there was all of you demanding that we keep playing.
Yes. That was fun.
But let's have a quick chat about the game as it is. First, I want to hear about rolling the dice. How did that feel?
I really like this. I think this is really cool.
The two dice pools.
Yeah, I really like the two dice pools, yes. And I like that you could shift our pools, I guess. Yeah. I wonder, and I don't know the math behind this because there's apparently math behind this. I wonder if like three dice is like a little too much or if maybe the challenges have to be a little harder.
Yeah. There's a lot of work I need to do on the MC's role because I want to have more of a list of things that I don't have my notes in front of me, a list of things that I can do as well. I wonder how many dice is enough. I wonder if four is actually enough, maybe.
Yeah.
Because then the most you can have is three.
Yeah.
Then you can end up rolling with one. I don't know.
You rolled a lot of sixes. The odds were pretty good in our favor.
Yeah. That too. And also maybe you could think about shifting it that even four is a miss because it was just seemed like everything was a success. Like there was just
I don't think
like,
we had any misses.
Yeah,
a mixed success. Misses. I definitely need to make sure that the consequence of a mixed success is more because I think a full success is only the really only good roll. With like a 4 to 5, that should be like you get what you want, but there's a cost to it. And I think I didn't emphasize that enough myself. And that's my fault, I think, in this case. I don't think I'll change the bands of success, but I think I'll emphasize more the costs. Mm-hmm. And I think what the MC will have is a list of actions that each monster can maybe take, and then also a list of consequence ideas and stuff, you know, like you're trapped, you're whatever, you whatever, and then that sort of stuff I need to make a bit more explicit.
This issue with the success ranges was something I definitely felt a bit odd about. I actually think it was more of an issue with how I was running the game as the master of candies. I learned a lot about what resources the MC player needs to run the game. I can definitely think of one example from the playtest, where I missed an opportunity to make use of the mixed success roll.
Yeah, nice.
Pop, nice. Let's
do it. All right, so roll your dice. You're looking for 4+.
Yay.
Okay,
yay.
So you got a 4. So that's a mixed success. So that's just damage.
Okay.
So you deal 3 damage.
Yay!
All right, I'm just going to check my notes to see how much health they have.
I really think emphasizing the nature of a mixed success will make the game's math feel a bit better. Next, Liam talked about the balance and number of dice the players get.
Would you... Because I almost think that 4 might not be enough, though. Would you ever, like, just throwing that out there to hear your thoughts about that, do you always want there to be, like... does it have to be an even number? Because would you think about going down just like 1 so it was like to 5?
Yeah.
Because then it would almost be like if you had one of them of the pools is always going to be more than the other and that could influence how your character acts. Like say for example,
I like that
you've
idea.
Got 3 and like just like starting and maybe at the start you get to pick which one your base sort of level is. Similar to the, you know, our two things in Avatar, balance. Like the balance. Yeah, yeah. That's the word I'm looking for. That it sort of also influences your out of combat sort of decisions.
I think that's definitely something that's worth doing, is worth considering. I think I might switch to five because there was an idea that I had about a balance move, right? Yeah. Which is something where, like, when you have your dice in tune, that's you perfectly working, like, the two aspects of yourself working in right. tune. And I almost wonder if that's how we do leveling up, is if, like, you have five, and then once you can spend candy to unlock your balance move, you get a sixth dice so that you can yeah. be balanced, and then that's when you can do that move. I'm definitely going to work on that. That's a good idea.
That's a cool, and that sort of gives something to sort of work towards and a big benefit as well,
because
it makes me more powerful.
Yeah. There are some interesting ideas there that I'm really excited to playtest in the future. There was a moment during the character creation where I was seriously worried about a core element of the game, the names. Fright or Fight was a fun and catchy title that grabbed me, and I took inspiration from John Harper's Laser and Feelings by using the name of the game as the two statistics. But unlike Lasers and Feelings, Fright and Fight are incredibly similar words, leading to some potential confusion. In this clip, I'm looking over at Freya's character sheet, where she may have confused the two terms. Now, I'm already noticing an issue.
Yes.
And that issue is that Fright and Fight sound very similar because Freya's got the dice on the wrong side.
Ooh.
No, that's not your fault. It's just I've been thinking for a while.
I love how you moved all four of them over instead of just taking two.
I have a color scheme. I have a color scheme that's working for me.
Well, the reason I pointed out, not to make you feel embarrassed, Freya, but it's just literally because the names are so similar. The game, as it's called Fright or Fight at the moment. And that's because I like the way the logo looks, which is up there in the top left corner. But
would Fight or Fright make more sense? Like Fight or Flight?
Yes, it does make more sense. But I like having the or below, and that meant I had to put the longer one. So I might have to change it. But I'm wondering if I should change the names.
I like the names. I think it's catchy. It's easy to hook onto. Maybe you could just add something like
four dice.
Or maybe something like a visual for each box that are really distinctly different so that you know at the start to put your... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So now your four dice on, like, and you can just, on the blue box or whatever. Just
definitely
to make
a good
sure
idea.
They don't get it mixed up.
Great. I like that. That is definitely something to investigate. Shift triggers are another idea that I was especially interested in. So I spoke to the players about how moving dice felt and what they thought could change there.
I almost think that, similar in vein to the discussion we just had about sort of like the easiness of sort of with the numbers and stuff, I think that it's too, what's the word? Like it can happen too often. It's too easy to shift your triggers so that or if I know going into this next move, like my next turn, I want to use Fight, I can just look at my thing and then just each turn just like shift it based on that and then just give myself more benefits. And I think that's almost like there needs to be like maybe a limit per combat that you can like shift your triggers or something, like trigger your shifts or something.
Yeah,
like
I wonder if maybe it happens more outside of combat.
Yeah.
And that might be a good thing. Because what I want those shifts to be is like it's going to be incentivizing you to play into your character's type, right? Yeah. Your archetype. Like if you think about the Avatar Legends RPG, when you have a condition that you want to clear, it asks you to do something specific, which I really like because that forces you to act in a certain way.
Exactly.
And so that's the sort of same thing. Like I really like when you enacted a devious plan or whatever that, or that sort of stuff was, or the not caring for your others is also very prankster, I feel, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, how did you feel rolling that?
No, I really liked it. And then even when I was like, you know, oh, I have to shift in it. You know, I have to stop and think about what my plan's going to be and what are the consequences for the other people, you know, or, you know, what's going to be me not giving regard to the other people. And I think it really helps you think through your move and then enact it, which I really liked. Just especially starting out, a really good support idea to think, how is this going to play out?
Yeah.
The devious plan one I love. I think that's really fun and really fits with the icons I chose.
Yeah, they definitely, they're a bit inspired by a game called Yzeba's Bed and Breakfast, which is a lovely game where instead of making characters, there's a list of characters you basically pick from. And their moves are called Whoopsies and Bingos, which I love. I spoke to the designer, one of the designers, Jay, on the season. And Jay was talking about how, you know, encouraging people to take up these characters, right? And I think that's a fun way to like sort of make you act as your character. Because like today, like we spent maybe what, half an hour creating our characters, and by the end of it, I felt like you all kind of were already playing your characters, and that was great, right?
Yeah.
Like, but I think one of the other things about Yazebas and another game that Jay Dragon worked on, Wanderhome, was that those sort of triggers and questions and stuff took so much editing to like dial it right in and stuff and get the feeling just right. So I think I'm going to be toying with those for quite a while.
Yeah.
Then I asked the players about their thoughts on the character creation. I'd wanted to keep the system simple, and I felt good about the characters they created. Let's see what they had to say.
I think that, as well, the character creation was really simple.
It worked really well.
It was fun. You know, we've discussed before that we've struggled with some, like, with D&D. It's such a complicated system that it really takes a long time to get up and at it, and I know that you put that into consideration with the character creation for this one, making it more accessible. And it also doesn't sort of like bog down the game, because there's like hours and hours that you have to spend creating this character at the start just to like get your head around it, which can be so off-putting, especially for those early sessions. So it was simple, it was quick, and it was like fun, and you got the like gist of your character, and like you said, we were already starting to like get into them.
Yeah, I think it must be also because we are the archetype really helps, because you know exactly we've all seen chick flicks, we've all seen, we've grown up with these. So it's really easy to fit into that character because you know exactly what kind of person they are. And then you can make a different
even if it's like something that you know, I'm not someone who recites facts all the time. Not necessarily about Beyonce. But, that I do love Beyonce, but
really,
but that yeah, twisted.
Yeah, but yeah, don't the twist beehive my words. Comes yeah, in. Yeah, exactly. But like, you know, it's fun because it's like instantly I get to go into this like little nerdy like character and like think of how I can just randomly recite those facts and get into those things.
Finally, I just wanted to get a general feel for the system overall. Was it all gelling? Did it actually work when put at the table? In terms of the game, I don't know, feel and everything, I mean, the story world of the game is quite simple. Was that a fun concept? Did you enjoy that sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, it was really fun. I felt nostalgic and going back into that sort of childhood, like acting like these kids and like the whole discussion with Jared and like all this stuff, bringing that back. Like, you know, like it's just, it's like fun, and it keeps you wanting to play more.
Yeah, very easy to immerse yourself in it.
Yeah, and back.
Yeah. And especially since it seems to be more of a one-shot type of deal.
Yeah, I think short campaigns maybe.
Maybe short, not, you know, long-term. I think it's quite good to not have heavy-hitting stuff come up. Like, it's just fun to, like, just be some kids.
Yeah.
We're just playing around.
And, call each other bossy and then sing a little, you know, sitting in a tree song.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really cool.
I think after playing it through, I definitely think that keeping it that age is like better, so I retract my earlier questions about at the age of like the archetypes and stuff, because it's not concrete, it's just sort of guidelines.
Well, I have lots of ideas about because I initially, when Zoe and I first did the character creation thing, I thought of it as more as like tween to teenage age, and like have like relationships be quite mechanically important.
Yeah.
But actually that wasn't the feeling I wanted to capture. And the feeling is being a kid and wanting to be the character that you dressed up as, you know, like so believing that for Halloween night, I am Beyonce. I am a fairy princess. I am Swiper. I wanted to specifically make a Halloween game that wasn't horror, that was like fun, spooky, you know? Because there's lots of people who don't like horror. I know you can't believe that.
I'm shocked. I'm terrified at that thought. That is horrible.
Great. Actually. Is there anything else you wish I asked you about the follow-up? Is there any burning things on your mind about that short session, apart from let's play again?
I just want to, really commend you. It was really, really fun.
That's good.
You should be proud of yourself.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's original, it's fun, and it's like, even I think obviously with the dice system, you know, there's so many games that it's tricky to find. Well, with the whole concept, it's hard to find original sort of innovative ideas. And I obviously don't know all the different games you took inspiration from for every little part of it, but it comes across as like authentically you.
I absolutely love the candy clearing the integrity and fraud and stuff. I think that's a really, really cool detail because obviously with Avatar and stuff, you know, you clear fatigue by sleeping or writing on dub, whatever. We've never really had...
Y'all wouldn't know.
You wouldn't know. You know.
Sorry you don't have an eel hound.
It's just like a bit niche. But I love the, like, incentive to get candy to, like, help clear integrity or frighten or help, you know, shift dice. I think that's a really cool thing that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's really funny because it's like, what's the second most important thing that you need in a Halloween night? Good costume and candy.
Yeah.
Like,
good stakes.
Yeah, definitely when I play this in the future around Halloween, candy's going to be a physical thing. When you spend candy, you eat it or something.
Yes,
it's going to be so like in my, I have like a page of recommendations or something.
Yes.
The Master of Candy doles out candy. But the players definitely buy it.
Fair is fair.
So what's next for this spooky game? I think I'm definitely going to change the name to Fight or Fright. I love the logo that I developed, and I think I can make it work with the names swapped around. Definitely sounds a bit more like Fight or Flight. The next major design I have to do is working on the Master of Candy's powers. I had some ideas about this that I wrote in a design update on the Wait, Roll That Again blog over on Substack, which you can find in the show notes. This area of the game is the most in development, and I'm excited to dedicate a little bit more time to those rules soon. I think it'll make the experience at the table more robust and equip MCs with the ability to shape the story in interesting ways. Finally, the major thing is just continuing to develop the game and fine-tune all the existing systems. It's going to be a nice long process that'll hopefully lead to a more polished project. In the next few weeks, I'll be releasing an open alpha version of Fight or Fright on the Wait, Roll That Again blog over on Substack. You'll be able to check out the game for free and play the work in progress version. Next year, we'll return with Season 2. Expect Season 2 to be bigger, more ambitious, and get this game closer to the finish line. I've already started recording with guests, and I think you'll be excited about the lineup. I'll continue to work on the game and provide updates over on Substack in the meantime, where I'll continue to work to make this game more successful. Don't be surprised if you hear more from me before Season 2 begins. I'm so excited to get this version of the game into your hands and to keep working on it over the next few months. Thank you for coming along this journey with me. We've been able to learn from some amazing designers, and I'm really looking forward to speaking to even more in the near future. My ultimate hope is that you felt inspired by something you've heard on this show, and now you too want to go out and make a game. Whether it's your very first game or the next in a long line of creations, I know you'll knock it out of the park. See you very soon. Wait to Roll That Again is hosted and produced by Alex Marinkovich-Josie. We're produced in association with Salient Podcasts, a network of student podcasts based in Wellington, Aotearoa, New Zealand. To find the show online, check the show notes below. If you'd like to support the show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your TTRPG friends. And if you want more game design work and to keep up to date with our spooky game project, you can check out the Wait Roll That Again Substack blog linked below. You can find me and the show on socials at MixUpPixels, especially on Blue Sky. Thanks for listening, and kakite.